SiriusXM Sports presents
At the Races with Steve Bick.
Horse racing, handicapping,
interviews.
This is At the Races with Steve Bick.
A very good Thursday. Race fans, Sirius 162, XM 207, Sports Zone 999, Sirius XM online, and at the website, stevepick.com. Snowy upstate New York, and it had really the first morning that Tina and I had to do all the outdoor activity, and she didn't have a delay. Usually you get a little. There wasn't enough, just enough snow to be annoying, and it's still snowing, and there were a lot of firsts this morning. That included getting the snow thrower to go, which was not easy. And in fact, Tina and I ended up having probably really didn't need the snow thrower, but you still want to get it going. And it wouldn't start. I got it started after she left, actually. But we had taken the shovels to the driveway, and the driveway is not small. So we were out there quite a bit this morning, and I also, because I was trying to get the snowblower going, I have that exhaust and gasoline smell, that, right? For those of you that have gone through this, that know the drill. Yeah, because I knew not to take a shower, because we're going to have to, I'm certainly going to have to go out, afterward.
Yeah, the opening night had a little bit of everything. You also then had the other giant number. How about you also had a 100-to-1 shot, a 95-to-1 shot, finished second in that eighth race allowance. How about that one, Michelle Brafford? And in fact, you had the Michelle Exacta. Michelle Brafford second at 96-to-1, basically, meet in secret. And then Kaleha, the other 7-pound bug, getting home from Michelle Elliott. You know, it's funny, there was the Michelle Elliott horse that scratched that I was interested in.
And I got to be honest, by 9:40, I was looking at the back. I was looking at the back of my eyelids. I was asleep by 9:40. I did not make it through that card. I woke up actually like at 10:30 and pulled up the results. It was kind of funny. I went upstairs at one point and I made the mistake of closing my eyes. Anyway, it was a classic start to the Turfway season, with just a little bit of everything. And you just have to be, I guess you could make a parallel to Kentucky Downs, where you got to be, we both got to be patient and not get exasperated, or have your budget drained to the point where you're out of dough. So it's either or. Anyway, I tried for Caitlin. We'll see. KK will be the backup, and we'll go through this sequence. Gus hit a couple. Gus hit a couple in here of his look, including that Oscar Go, right? Oscar Go with, was that the seventh? The mile and a quarter race, I think, right? Yeah, that was the mile and a quarter for Connor Murphy with Machado. And, on paper, it looked like the horse. That and Golden Symphony. And Golden Symphony actually ran competitively, second choice, but kind of backed up in the late stages.
winners came from a variety of places. You had, in fact, the Nightcap. You had that horse of Doug Danner's that hadn't been seen since Oaklawn. And speaking of Oaklawn, we will talk to Jason Milligan in about a half an hour or so and get our first look ahead at the Oaklawn season, which starts tomorrow. I let everybody know as soon as I saw it, the cancellation at Aqueduct today, high winds downstate. So Aqueduct knocked out today, FYI, if you had not heard that. But anyway, Harmonica in that Nightcap for Doug Danner, 1748, coming from Oaklawn. You had an Indiana-based winner from the summer. That was Always Wanting with Kalea. That was the eighth race. Yeah, Church Oscar Go had last been seen at Churchill. In the maiden, in that good maiden race that we talked about, Chuck Peary wins with a Motown filly for owner James Connors. This was with Corrales and actually romped. Mo Picks, Please, who we do remember in that. In fact, if I'm not mistaken, if I went back and looked at the Keeneland analysis, very well may have played Mo Picks at Keeneland. Ran twice. Yeah. Was good in here. And actually, 4-1 morning line went off at almost 7-1. Mo Picks, Please, and won by five. Won well. But was last seen at Keeneland. So you get the point here. Indiana produced the number of the, I think, a total ultimately of three winners. Belterra, a couple of Belterra exiters in the early, some of the mid-card races. And you had a horse from Laurel, Bernie Dunham, with Julian Leperu. Anita won that starter allowance. So they, much like what Seth discussed, if you were just listening to the replay, I got to tell you, I laughed for another half hour. The banana cream pie, right? maybe you heard it for the first time this morning, and found it. I hope you found it as funny as I did, because I was absolutely, I got the biggest kick out of it. It was kind of funny. All right. In addition to that, let's hit the biggest news story. Although we will not, I don't think we're going to really discuss more Paco Lopez fallout until we get to Arizona next week. Lisa Lazarus probably Tuesday at the symposium. All right. So we'll talk about the ramifications and the way HISA manages, is going to manage this topic. And for those that did not see the news mid-afternoon, after we were off the air, HISA issued one of their provisional suspensions. And this is the terminology that's been used when it comes to trainers violating, whether it's whether it's medication overages or whether it's some of the contamination topics, in fact, here I'll just make it simple. We'll read from Matt Hegarty's piece. The Horse Racing Integrity and Safety Authority has issued a provisional suspension of Paco Lopez after video showed him whipping a horse in the neck after the fifth race at Parks Tuesday. In the statement, HISA said that the adjudication of the provisional suspension will proceed under an expedited timeline. HISA rules allow the authority to issue provisional suspensions when a licensee's behavior threatens to undermine public confidence in racing. What else do you need? What else do you need to know? This, I will tell you that a lot of people you know, there's funny. There's been any number of circumstances, incidents, however you want to frame them, where people have said, "Oh, HISA, can HISA help? Can HISA do what? You know, where's HISA for something that they can?" Well, it turns out in this particular case, yeah, very much so, something that they can intercede, and so we'll get not an explanation. Nobody needs it. I mean, the explanation is self-explanatory, but in terms of how it'll be managed, and there's plenty of other portions of this. Parks, as I told you, as we were kind of getting off the air, I mentioned Parks's own statement. That included this: we want to express that we aspire to hold the jockey colony and all the horsemen and women at Parks to highest standards. Unsportsmanlike behavior should not and will not be tolerated, and we will deal with this accordingly. So there's Parks's aspect to it. There's the Pennsylvania Racing Commission can act as well. And I think the most long range, and I would say the biggest impact will actually come from other outfits. You may have seen Stephen Santulli. This was a Colts Neck horse. Stephen Santulli had his own statement about how disgusted and disappointed and troubled was by what's transpired. He also excoriated George Duarte, and George's initial response. And as I said yesterday when I was discussing it with Tony, Duarte seemed to be responding to what he thought was, at the time anyway, it seemed like he was responding to something else, because for him to say what he did initially in terms of defending Paco, he was saying, he took care of the horse. I got the sense that he hadn't even recognized what had transpired after the wire, and he, you know, he reformulated an expression of contrition, apology, however you want to frame it. He also, I think, disappointed and disgusted, everybody looking at this. The rest of the day yesterday, I had several conversations with people, and there were a few points where one person said, somebody asked me, "Why aren't you not acting disgusted?" And they said, they've been disgusted by Lopez for years, and that that the industry at large and other stewards in many jurisdictions have had plenty of opportunity to better instruct, adjudicate, formulate a way for Paco Lopez to behave, and even to the extent of having suggestions that he should have been dealt with harshly in any number of occasions. I mean, yesterday we didn't even get a chance to talk about him almost crippling and potentially killing Roberto Marat. you heard from Tony. I mean, Tony sat in rooms with him for years, and it's something that should have been dealt with in a more direct manner way before this. So we'll see what, you know, we'll see how the HISA machinery, you know, what their penalties and, you know, what impact, you know, they'll have. And we'll talk to Lisa when we get to Arizona. We also are going to talk to Alan Foreman, and I had reached out to Alan separate even from Heiss's provisional suspension of Lopez. I don't know if you saw the piece that was T.D. Thornton, right? T.D. Thornton had an extensive piece that came out of Tuesday's Maryland Racing Commission meeting, and there's some license transfer elements involving, you know, the situation for first Stronach to turn over the Maryland Jockey Club to the Horsemen, but that'll get resolved. What I'm more intrigued by the decision making that's gone on regarding the training center location, and then the apparent scuttling of the repositioning of the oval. If you didn't see this, they're not going to have to twist the footprint of the oval. It'll stay where it is. And so, you know, for those that said, well, if they're turning the racetrack, then it's not the same racetrack that Seabiscuit and War Admiral ran on and Dinner Party and what Dinner Party ran at Saratoga. The first Preakness wasn't even run in Baltimore. So let's not get carried away. But no, the idea that was involved in that shift would preclude acquiring some property from Sinai Hospital, and they don't want to get involved in that. So the footprint of the racetrack will remain where it is. Anyway, Alan will give us all of this. He would have joined us. He is sick, and in fact, he's even had to postpone part. He was going to make his way to Arizona with an intermediate stop, and he's had to cancel that. So he begged off today, and he said, let's do it at Tucson. So you'll hear Monday morning, you'll hear from Alan Foreman on this and other Alan Foreman-related topics, of which there's always a myriad. Caitlin Free will join us to go through this $155,000 pick five carryover. If you have not looked at it, it's essentially a very similar sequence to last night. You've got a filly and mare maiden special going a mile and a quarter like last night, and that went as a little later in the sequence. But then there's a nickel claimer and going a mile. There's another mile for 12.5. There's fillies and mare first level or second level allowance going 6.5 as the feature. And then there's a maiden 7,500 going a mile in the nightcap. So 12 by 12 by 11 by 12 by 12. Unbelievable. Yeah. So we'll see if we can't negotiate this. And I do appreciate actually the late start. The 5:55 Eastern time is actually kind of helpful. It gives some time to, because I didn't expect to have to you know, dive in. I was going to pick like one race, maybe, was my thought. I looked at two races, that we talked about yesterday, the fifth and the seventh, and I really didn't get anything accomplished. Certainly, though, Tony Gallo did, right? Tony. Which was the horse that, right? Was it in the eighth? Yeah, I think it was that. Was that the horse that Tony liked? I forget now, but I know Tony gave you a nice winner. So it'll be when we talked to him the other day, and it'll be Caitlin's turn, hopefully, tonight for tonight's action. All right. What else? Jason Milligan in about 15 minutes. Caitlin. The Saratoga special team. We got, as I call them, the three-headed monster. Clancy and Law. We'll have one of them. We talked to Tony, of course, yesterday. And then Dave Hill, of course. Well, Dave, those two tough beats 2 weeks ago, I think they kind of fishtailed a little bit. Because Dave struggled. They not a good week last week. So we'll see what Dave's thoughts are. I hope, not a bad time of the season to kind of, to have the wheels come off. He was on a terrific midseason roll, and then you had the Raiders and the Vikings both let him down badly. And so we'll see. We'll regroup. And you got a very entertaining game tonight. Actually, that'll be fun. Watch the game and play this pick five. They will literally overlap perfectly. 7:55 post for the first leg of the pick five, the fifth, and the game I think starts what at 8:15. Yeah, all right. After Dave Hill, of course, we'll check in with Jeff Franklin, and I got to tell you, this is a really good card at Aqueduct. I ended up. I mean, basically, I've got the whole card to deal with, and the Cigar Mile. Cigar Mile's crazy. I mean, for this time of year, you couldn't really ask for more. Bookham Dano. I mean, in terms of the contenders, and David's morning line. He made post time. In fact, here, let me see if they've published other than what David offered with his on his medias. He's on Blue Sky too. I did not actually. No, they have not. It's so annoying. They have not yet. Published a quick sheet yet, which is my go-to at DR. I love the quick sheets. Kenny Peck came up with them. Here, let me turn to David. I know I retweeted it, but it's just easier to go to his page. Here we go. All right. So post time is 7-2, and he made Bookham Dano second choice at 4-1, or Mulligan, Mulligan is favored at 3-1, then post time 7-2, then Bookham Dano 4-1, and locked 9-2. Senior Buscador is next at 6-1. And, you gotta figure out who to be you know, kind of against. Andy talked about locked, but boy, second off the layoff, and you would think he's. I mean, I'll be very anxious for Jeff's read from a Thorograph perspective. Locke came back off the year layoff. He was away 351 days, and he immediately established a new career top. He ran a three-quarter. He ran a 0.3, a 0.75, essentially, a three-quarter. So, yeah, he's a gun runner, and gun runners improve 3 points from 2 to 3. And he essentially improved, let's say, a point and a quarter already. So second off the layoff, locked is a contender. I understand why Andy, you know, was against him a little bit, but I'll tell you something else. You look at his maiden win at Saratoga and you look at the comebacker where he wins off by 7, and they're a template for this spot, and he's drawn outside Mulliken, who, you know, I mean, granted, Mulliken, you know, had found himself in a different position in the Breeders' Cup, and he ended up rallying, you know, nicely, considering it's something he never really had done in a long time, you know, find himself having to pass horses, but his certainly. You know, Flavian's inclination here is going to be to go forward. And the fact is, I guess other than maybe, I guess Nelson Avenue is one of the speeds. Let's actually take a look. I have not looked at the time form pace projector. And ideally, you would want to, you know, they at least get a feel for how it looks. Let's take a peek. All right. Stay with us. Here we go. They're calling. I mean, I imagine they're going to have a neutral pace here. No, actually, it's coded red. It is coded red. Nelson Avenue expected to lead, and Repo Rocks in close proximity, and then Pipeline, Pipeline's an interesting case because he's a horse that finds himself on or near the lead in routes, and that's different than, you know, than one turn speed, obviously, but he'll at least be just his natural inclination, although Junior Alvarado gets aboard, and Junior is more of a patient type, a stalk and go type. So there is not a ton of obvious pace, but it's a big field. Mulliken being shown in a garden spot, essentially, behind those three speeds. And maybe Flavian, after the experience in the Breeders' Cup, maybe Flavian, you know, maybe he taught him something, essentially. You know, certainly his effort in the John Nayrud, you know, where he sat behind and then took over. I mean, Mulliken is tough in here. There's no two ways about it. Bookham Dano, actually, according to Pace Projector, would be sitting fifth. And that would, I'm sure, Irad would be very happy with that, and he can basically, you know, save ground.
behind these speeds. So you got to make a decision whether, you know, the sheer volume of 11 horses that somebody else, you know, gets aggressive. I mean, Repo Rocks in his one turn efforts. I mean, he's a horse that can be a little forward. Yeah, Law Professor is a mid pack stalk and go type. Johnny, you know, Johnny's the key here with Locked. There's so many embraceable horses in here, and that includes, you know, we never had a chance to talk to Jeff Runco about Coastal Mission's win in the 49er, but I respect Runco so much, and Coastal Mission, what a nice he's had. Three wins, 2 seconds, made $500,000, won the Parks Dirt Mile, two-turning, wins the 49er preparing for this. Second in the John Nayrud, second in the Salvatore to Mulliken and Bright Future. And it's funny, at his home track, you understand, you certainly understood why Runco, you know, tried him in the Charlestown Classic. He had won the West Virginia Breeders' Classic doing the same thing. But he just never really, he just sort of went around for whatever reason. It's funny. That's that's his worst performance of the year by all rights. Was right there on his home track where he's won plenty. So Coastal Mission. And let's see, what did David make him? There's a lot of ways to go. Here, I'll give you the whole rundown. Bookham Dano is 4-1. Nelson Avenue is 30-1. Repo Rocks is 30-1. Vinsanity is 50-1. Mulliken, 3-1. Law Professor, who we talked about with Andy, 15-1. It's a pretty juicy number on a horse that has won at this trip, and not just this trip, but has won the mile, you know, at Aqueduct, one turning. And I don't care what Andy says. Five wins out of seven starts at Aqueduct, and three at the distance out of six tries. Law Professor, 15-1, and you know, he's a horse that can be placed, you know, in a couple of different. You know, he could be also, you know, tucked in behind the speed. Then you've got Locked, as mentioned, 9-2. Pipeline for Cherie, 20-1. Kind of don't. He's going to have to run a career best. He's a 6-year-old, and he is coming off a career top, actually, or, you know, basically pairing his best. But he would have to improve a couple of lengths to impact this. Senior Buscador, we already sung his praises in terms of the turn back. Coastal Mission's fast enough. And then there's Post Time, you know, who we loved in the Breeders' Cup Dirt Mile, and he had left with a little bit too much to do. So Sheldon, he's another horse that has won from various spots on the track, and, you know, doesn't want to be too far back, but, you know, he's got the whole backstretch to find position anyway. So this is a really entertaining edition of our mile, and I'm anxious for Crafty. We'll have Jeff Franklin in a couple of hours, and we'll see how Jeff's going to approach it. And we're also going to do the Demoiselle with him. And I understand why Mohima is 4-5, but you can have her at 4-5. No thanks. She obviously she's a major win candidate, but she doesn't have to win, I'll tell you that. I mean, certainly from a fake standpoint. So that's why I picked the Demoiselle for Jeff as the other race rather than the Remsen, which seems pretty, I don't want to say open and shut, but it seems pretty clear. All right. I didn't necessarily expect to dive in that deep. Sean Clancy is going to join us at 10:30, by the way. He is the lucky recipient of the three-headed monster invitation. I love it. All right, let's get Jason Milligan. Look, if I haven't talked, I haven't seen Jason, actually. Sometimes you run into, you know, to racetrack executives when you're traveling around. We'll certainly see plenty of racetrack executives at Arizona, and maybe Jason, maybe we'll see him there too. Jason, good morning.
Good morning, Steve. How are you?
I'm great. I'm just saying, I can't recall seeing you on the road after the season.
I was on the road, but no, we did not cross paths this year,
which is unusual.
Very unusual, yes.
All right. Well, are you coming? So, are we going to see you in Arizona by chance?
I will not be there, but Lou Acella will be there. He's the keynote speaker to start the event, so that will be very interesting.
And always a pleasure to see. Maybe we'll slap him on if he wants a few minutes. In fact, that's actually a conversation for those that like to poke around our archives. That's a conversation from two seasons ago that was really quite good and interesting, because it was my first chance to talk to Lewis about the family and about, you know, growing up Acella and his father and the legacy of the racetrack. And of course, that's a perfect segue into tomorrow's season opener, another, you know, the December opening, which has now become, you know, now it's part of the landscape. There's been a lot of innovation, Jason, essentially, that has come with a steady drumbeat.
Yes, and to your point, a lot of this is because of Lewis Sella's vision that he had moving forward, obviously with building the hotel, the event center, and just making Oaklawn the place to be.
No doubt, and of course the luxury, you know, you in so many ways, we're watching and we discuss Kentucky and the historic horse racing and what it's done and how it's changed the landscape in Kentucky and the circuit, and not even to bring in the quarters and the standard breds. But it all started obviously there with the instant racing game machinery. And it's made a mammoth difference in a lot of areas of the country for racing. In some areas, it's not available, and you know, certainly the California situation is probably the most glaring. But in the meantime, the purse luxury that you've got at your disposal, has just made Oaklawn, you know, that much more attractive it wasn't a secret for a lot of horsemen, but
we're getting more attention, that is for sure, and part of that goes to, we have 17 new trainers coming on grounds this year, so people are starting to take notice of the quality that we're trying to get to. Like I said, we feel like this time of year we have the best racing. So, not to pump our chest, but you know, that's just how we feel right now. December through May, we feel like we have the best racing circuit.
Talk about the season, and you say 17 new outfits. I mean, let's take a feel for.
Sure. So we've got Ray Ashford coming from Texas. Mark Cassie's coming back this year with a string. Phil D'Amato's coming with a string. Bart Hone, Jeremiah Englehart, Todd Fincher, David Jacobson, Safi Joseph, and Mike Stidham. And that's not 17, but that's what I can think of off the top of my head. So obviously there's Ken Sweezy's, Sarah Hamilton's. So, you know, we've got a good mix of new trainers on the grounds.
You know, it's funny. I saw where Kent is it, sent out.
Sweezy?
Yeah, Sweezy put out a tweet. He's staying in the hotel, and he was pretty agog at what he welcomed.
Well, I tell everyone, I know the people have been to Oaklawn, but if you haven't been to Oaklawn the last 4 years, you're missing out, because it is a different atmosphere here now with all the new, like I said, the hotel, the event center, the fine dining options we have. I mean, literally, you don't have to leave Oaklawn once you get here.
Well, there's also, you know, the standards and, of course, the, you know, the purse levels, as mentioned, you look at what, you know, between the Southwest and the whole lead up to the Arkansas Derby. Let's actually look at the calendar and see what.
So basically, Steve, if you have a 3 year old for playing for the Kentucky Derby, there's 4 million reasons to come through Oaklawn. Starting January 4th, the Smarty Jones is $250,000. And then January 22nd, you have the Southwest, which is $1 million this year. We've raised it from 800,000 to $1 million this year. And then February 25th, I believe you have the Rebel Stakes at 1.25 million. And then March 3rd, 29th, you have Arkansas Derby at 1.5 million. So, like I said, there's 4 million reasons right there to bring your 3 year old to Oaklawn.
Well, and you know, the racing festival of the South is a little different than it used to be. It's more spread out. The apple blossom. I mean, in a lot of ways. I mean, yes, the 3 year old colts become the focus and have become the focus given the money and also, you know, particularly the way Bob Baffert made it, you know, part of American Pharoah's path,
plus we also had the 3 year old fillies last year with the success of Torpedo Anna coming through here 100%. As well. So
that's right.
So we raised two of those races as well. The Martha Washington is now $300,000, and the Honey Bee is now $500,000. So we added money to that division as well. But to your point, Apple Blossom on April 12th is $1.25 million. And then the following week, the Oaklawn Handicap on April 19th is $1.25 million as well. So there's lots of reasons for horsemen to be at Oaklawn.
Well, and of course, horse players and
bull fields.
Exactly.
So I think opening weekend, we're averaging opening days like 10.3 horses per race, and then Saturday we're at like 9.4. So we had a good opening weekend in the entry box as well. So like I said, we're getting our wheels under us and just looking forward to another great season.
Well, and of course, you know, the Churchill, for instance, Churchill Outfits, that kept horses on track that didn't arrive early. They just shipped out this week, and you know, it's a transitional. You know, everybody's transitioning into the winter.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. So like right now we have just over 1,200 horses on property. Obviously we can hold up to 1,450. So we're still looking for some of the horses to ship from Kentucky. They've got till, I think, December 31st before Churchill actually closes the track. And then also we'll have an influx of horsemen coming from Remington Park once they finish on like December 15th.
Well, we'll be at Remington for Springboard Mile, and a guy like Ray Ashford, certainly, right?
Ray's
pack up.
Ron Moquette will be there. We have a horse in the Springboard Mile as well.
Well, and of course, Moquette, you can't even have Oaklawn without Moquette.
That's right. Just ask him.
and Wayne, of course, you got Lucas. And I'm just looking at tomorrow, for instance, and you got the Christmas season stakes that were added as part of a December. Yep. So the advent kicks things off, and Wayne has got Innovator as an even money favorite. But there's you know, here's a typical two-year-old maiden group going as the eighth race, going the flat mile. 110,000 for
main special weight.
Yep.
And like I said, our lowest purse is 32,000 this year. So, and then our allowance races start at 130,000, and we added 10 overnight stakes to our schedule this year to kind of help boost our bigger days, and those all start at, those are all 145,000.
Any innovation, any added wrinkles to the wagering menu?
Not to the wagering menu. We little minor thing. We added a pick three to the very first race instead of just having the pick five there to give an extra multi-race wager with the. Now we have the daily double pick three and a pick five offer on the first race, so maybe help entice more action early in the day.
Nice, and of course. The last showcase how much innovation there's been at Oaklawn in the last 10 years. If you went back and looked at, I don't know, a 2005 betting menu, there might have been two daily doubles on the entire card.
Early and late, yes.
Mr. Sella didn't want he was one of the last people to accept multi-race wagers as a matter of rolling course. Yeah.
Yes, he was a big fan of Win Play Show.
Exactly.
Well, he was also, like I said, you know, we were one of the last tracks to actually adopt the colored saddle towels. Even
that's pretty funny. That's what's interesting is, you know, there's the great history there, plus all the modern, you know, the modern aspect and the accoutrement. And for those that that have never been to Hot Springs, I talk about it, you know, all the time. Particularly not to dissuade people from coming in December or January, but the later you turn up, and that was one of the things, Jason, that was I think really welcome in terms of extending the end of the meet to Derby Day, to Kentucky Derby Day, because the meet would be ending. Yeah, the Racing Festival of the South would roll around, the Apple Blossom and the Oaklawn Handicap and the Arkansas Derby. It would roll around, and the weather was just getting nice, and the Apple Blossoms and it's just getting warm and pleasant, and it'd be like, okay, the meet's over. So the extra few weeks, people can really see how pleasant it is.
Yeah. So yes, you're right. And we do have some new innovations this year that we're working on. We will offer the Racing with Bruno workouts on our website as well, because we have a lot of first time starters here early in the year. So if people want to look at those workouts, they'll be able to go to view those at our Oaklawn.com websites.
Nice.
You know, so that's a new wrinkle for us this year that we're excited about. Because we've seen it at other jurisdictions, so we're happy to bring it to Oaklawn.
Very cool. And of course, you know, in Kentucky, most notably the opportunity to watch, you know, all the works.
Like I said, all you have to do is go to Oaklawn.com, and you can watch them for free. You don't have to sign up or anything. They'll just be available.
Very good. I'm just pulling up the site.
Yeah, I'm not so sure it's available yet, so they just got here today.
Okay.
They literally just got here today. So.
He's going to start filming workouts tomorrow morning.
As of right now, they're filming workouts right now.
Very cool.
So hopefully we'll have something up later this afternoon.
Excellent.
Yeah. So.
At Oaklawn.com for everything, including the hotel and so forth, and seat reservations.
Dining rooms, everything.
And here, I want to print out the. I always have the stake schedules in front of me all winter long, and there it goes. So before January 1, And we should actually go over the – let's also go over the schedule in terms of – I mean, obviously the Friday, Saturday, Sunday.
Yes.
But some other wrinkles.
Yes. Yeah, so this year we brought back Martin Luther King Day on January 20th. That Monday we'll race. And then obviously we have our Monday President's Day, February 17th. But the new wrinkle for February is we are not going to race Sunday, February 9th, Super Bowl Sunday. So we're taking that day off. And then obviously the only other Sunday is in April, and that's April 20th, Easter Sunday. We will not race that day.
Okay, and I'm looking. There it is. I'm looking at the schedule here, the featured days: Smarty Jones Day, the 4th, Southwest, January 4th, January 25th. Rebel is February 22nd. Derby Day, March 29th. Apple Blossom Day, the 12th, and Oaklawn Handicap Day, the 19th of April. So.
And we race through Kentucky Derby Day, May 3rd.
Exactly. All right. So just enough. President's Day and MLK Day. Two wrinkles. All right.
Got it. Yep. 65-day race meet right there.
Excellent. All right. I've got to sit down with my calendar as well and see if we're going to be Rebel.
You missed us last year. I think you had a personal emergency last year.
We
you
did.
Couldn't make it.
Exactly. Yep. And which was everything that has now worked off of the NHC has kind of thrown it. Having it in March has been kind of.
I'm still not used to it. I'm still used to late January.
Exactly.
To be honest with you.
Yeah. Exactly. The end of January or the first week in February. But the Super Bowl in Vegas forced that hand, and now for at least another 3 years, it's going to continue to be, that March date, and so it's kind of because the Rebel was always my favorite visit. Mm-hmm. I've been to both. I've done both Rebel and Derby, and of course the best was the year we got to come twice with the when we had the HBPA convention.
Exactly. Yes.
Which was fabulous. Yep. So all right, we will absolutely lock in a date. And on the jock side, I'm just looking at that's one other thing we should at least consider.
So we've got a lot of apprentice this year, bug riders that we're excited about, and we'll see what they're like. Tyler Bacon, obviously Joseph Bellmere from last year, Jose Gutierrez, Eric Medlin, Cesar Perez,
wow.
Amanda Poston, and Joseph Romero, and of course Eric Asmussen as well.
Well, and Eric's
leading rider at Lone Star last year.
I wonder how much. I guess he's probably got quite a ways yet for his 5 pounds.
I'll be honest with you, I'm not sure where he's at.
I'll check on that. But just looking at the numbers, Poston, you mentioned she's a 10-pound bug, 7 for Romero. And they've got they're dotting the lineup. Medellin is a 5-pound bug.
Yeah.
Gutierrez is a 10-pound. Well, get used to that here's tomorrow. I'm looking at tomorrow's fourth race. You've got 1, 2, 3, 4. You got 4 of the bugs are involved.
Yeah.
So get used to the bug boys.
Mm-hmm. So, but other than that, a lot of the main jockeys from last year are back again this year. So we're excited about that. Ramon Vasquez, Rafael Bejarano, obviously Keith Asmussen's back, Ricardo Santana. So like I said, we've got a good solid group of jockeys here in the room, and it's a good group of guys as well and girls.
Well, Torres and Arietta and Harry.
Yeah, I didn't even mention Christian.
Yeah, Harry Hernandez, who I think is a vastly underrated rider.
Yes.
If I'm not mistaken, I think I saw in the last day or two that he has a new
baby. Became a father.
He, right?
Became a father.
That's
yes, I saw it as well.
Yeah. Congratulations to Harry.
Yep.
We rode him when he was a bug in New York, and he's a guy that he wins. He's all right. Well, getting ready, and tomorrow, just looking at it's a nice mix. We got the Archy breads on display. The Advent is the feature. Saturday, the Ring the Bell, and then on next week, the mistletoe, the poinsettia, the tinsel, and the year's end. All the new snakes.
Yeah. So, like I said, we're ready to go. We can start today. Let's start today.
You got to let Turfway get day two of their meet start.
I understand.
They managed to produce a carryover for day two, actually. So.
Gotcha. Well, I see. I've been so busy, I didn't keep up with it yesterday.
it's that transition. You know, it's that transition period. Los Al kicks off tomorrow as well. The intermediate between Del Mar and Santa Anita. But Oaklawn back on your menu, and Jason Milligan looking forward to the Oaklawn season, and undoubtedly big impact on the Oaks and Derby Trail, certainly, and the older horses as well. Safe meet. Wish everybody, a great season.
Thanks, Steve. I appreciate the time, and don't be a stranger.
No. We'll have regular check-ins, and Jeff Taylor. We'll go up to Jeff upstairs and get his analysis for big days. He does a tremendous job. There's Mary Rampolini, of course, with the DRF coverage as well.
Hardest working employee for daily racing for him.
Unbelievable.
She is everywhere. I don't see how she does it.
It is amazing. She's got the widest swath of territory to cover for the racing for him. No doubt.
Yep.
Jason Milligan, everybody. Jace, thank you.
Appreciate it, Steve. Thank you. Have a great day.
Jason Milligan, folks, and the team at Oaklawn as they get started. The Oaklawn season. One thing we didn't talk about with the sprinters, and, of course, when you mention Moquette, you think of Whitmore, and, of course, the Whitmore stake itself on the – on the calendar, but the sprint division is another area. We think about the handicap and the apple blossom for the older, but the sprint program is very strong, start to finish. And the first is the King Cotton, I think, is usually the King Cotton. King Cotton is really the first. There is an overnight stake as well, but that's one of those $145,000 sprints that Jason mentioned. But the King Cotton gets it going, and then they come back with the. Now this is interesting. Now I see all these overnights that he's mentioned. There's the Byerly Turk. Then the Bugler, the General MacArthur, the Commodore, the Travista, the La Pectoral, we'll have to look that up, the American Pharaoh, the Eclipse, the Southern Hospitality. These are all new overnights. The Majestic, is for the hotel. Oh, you know what we're going to do? We'll have to roll some of these past Dave Hill later. But the Majestic, I can tell you, it was the name for the hotel. which I got. See, I happen to love, you know, that you know, the abandoned building. You know, there's a whole subgenre on the internet. You know, started years ago on was Flickr, right? Flickr, was that the original photo posting? And now it's pretty much on. It's extensive on Instagram. Tina is not as keen as I am, but I love abandoned property, and that, yeah, it's a whole thing. I follow a bunch of those, but the Majestic, I mean, you couldn't get in. I think I'm too old to go, you know, exploring into those buildings. It's dangerous, frankly, but there's, you know, I admire those that do it. And of course, some of them, they explore now with the drone camera. They can, like, navigate, you know, if they can't get onto the property, like that, like the Six Flags outside of New Orleans that is so popular with Urbex. Urbex is, if you look up that term, URBEX. Yeah. Anyway, the Majestic, you know, was there at the end of Broadway, and then they knocked it down. But that's what that overnight is named for, undoubtedly. And Trevista rings a bell too. All right, we'll ask Dave. Let's see what. Well, and of course, you know, some other, you know, Lake Hamilton, the Valley of the Vapors. You know, they've added a whole bunch of stakes over the last several years. They've got a lot of money to give away. All right, let's get Caitlin in here, and KK's making me laugh because he was in the bullpen. He was ready, but you know, we can't have the opening salvos of the Turfway season without Caitlin E. Free.
Yellow.
Yellow is right. My father used to answer the phone yellow with a Y. That's kind of funny. It made me laugh. It made me think of my dad. How are you?
I'm good. It's good to be back at Turfway. It's funny. I didn't really realize how much I missed it until the first race ran, hearing Tony's voice. And of course, when something wild happened in the second race, I'm like, man, this place is so fun.
It is. And just seeing the water tower, it is probably enough to, you know, to appreciate Northern Kentucky.
It absolutely is. And Florence is not too far within the hour of where I grew up. So it's always special to go back there. And Turfway's been my home track for a while. So it's really special to be able to be on the broadcast there. And it's a place that will always hold something to my heart.
Well, and, you know, we started talking 2 winters ago. You know, you do such a nice job following the action, and it led to the opportunities downstate, and where you've also distinguished yourself, as we say.
Well, thank you.
Before we actually dive in, what some Churchill highlights from the fall, particularly the Stars of Tomorrow action? Anything that Who obviously Patch Adams, but what else are you taking with you coming out of the fall meet?
Two really big things that I think I'm taking out of that meet was just how impressive Luis Saez was. Just Tyler Gaffney was injured and he had a riding suspension, I believe, for 3 days, which kind of didn't make it as close, but I'm not sure it really would have mattered all that much because Lee Saez was just, didn't matter if it was long shots, favorites, everything in between. He is just such a well-rounded rider. You hardly ever see him get any type of whip infractions because he's a rider that is so strong in his core and in his arms. He can just will a horse over the finish line, and just the impressive performance from him to win that jockey title was just incredible. I think the most wins he had, I want to say it was 42 or 43. That is the most since Julian Leperu set the record of 63 in 2008. So quite a performance from him. And the other thing, she didn't run on Stars of Tomorrow, too. She's going to run in the Demoiselle in a couple of days. Muhima for Brad Cox, I think, is the best two-year-old filly.
Well, we'll find out. She's 4-5 and is coming in with the big rep. I said earlier today, I mean, just based on what I'm seeing from the figs, I mean, she's okay. She doesn't have to win, I'll tell you. She's gonna have to run as, you know, at least as well or better. And there's easily three horses that are, you know, within earshot of her, including Linda with Fortuna Mia, coming out of the Tempted. But she is the filly to beat. She's a Munnings out of the Tappet mare, Three Chimneys Breeder, and she was a $700,000 purchase by Sheikh Hamdan's daughter, that Sheikha Hissa.
She's just been very, very impressive. And I think I was most surprised when she won a short distance because she's a big type of a filly. And I know she is by Munnings and she really gets her speed from that and gets the stamina from the Tappet side. And the Munnings, they don't always stretch out all that well. I think the fillies do a little bit better than the colts do. But I've just been blown away by what I've seen from her in the mornings as well as on the track.
All right. Well, so when we talk later with Jeff, we'll keep this in mind. And I'm sure you're convincing some people with that kind of glowing endorsement. Caitlin is with us, and I opened the show talking about last night's first set of big field heats, and we had about as typical a Turfway slate as you're going to see, right?
It had everything. It had the late pick five carryover. It had a 43-1 shot winning, a little bit of chalk, jockey's objections, everything. Everything you could possibly hope for and remember from a Turfway Park night. It had it. I swear it had it.
And the carryover, which actually came from the first five, gets placed onto races 5 through 9 tonight, and we'll start to walk through them. Obviously it's early, but anything that you particularly noted? I went through the list of racetracks where winners were last seen, and three from Indy, two from Belterra, but then Laurel and Keeneland and Churchill. I mean, it was a nice mix. And then, you know, you look at the way horses won. You had horses win, you know, on or near, and you had horses that came from, you know, from well back. So it seems like the track started up very fair and even.
It's going to be a little bit colder tonight, so I'm anxious to see if the track maybe tightens up a little bit.
Yeah.
It's pretty chilly out there right now. I think it's going to warm up slightly. We'll see if it tightens up a bit. But overall, I thought it was very fair. And there really wasn't any type of a thing that I could remark about. I did say last night on the show just how much, especially at some of the lower levels, you really need to pay attention to the Belterra horses.
You know, the way I've sort of spread these out, because I was curious about the distances and
because sometimes you'll see, you know, you'll see certain themes, and maybe there is one actually. Here's the first, the third, and the ninth, where horses won from close. Harmonica Wired at almost 8-1. That was the nightcap. In the third, the Bernie Dunham Aniata with Leperu was right on the lead, took over and won. Same running style from Golden Town. Those were all sprints. And I think the only route winner from close up, and actually it was wire to wire, Mo Picks Please in that maiden race. And boy, now that I saw that race live, and she was in control every step. Corrales really meted out her speed beautifully for Chuck.
Yeah, as soon as she got out of the gates, that race was over.
And then there's the other. It's interesting. The other routes, and of course you had the mile and a quarter race that Oscar Go won with Machado from mid pack. But the other Broken Justice's win was from downtown, from the back of the field. Summer Blessed, that 8,000 claimer for Larry Smith with Perry Utes, who gets on the board the opening night. These were all from, so the routes for the most part were won from off the pace, and the sprints from up close a little bit. That's the one inkling that I think you could take away from last night.
The Summer Blast race, just that was so impressive to me, because Perry is known to be a rider that's really good on the front end, and to see him win with that horse from way off of the pace, I was not prepared for that.
I love it. Amazing. He's how old is he now?
70, I believe.
Unbelievable. It's just unbelievable. Let's turn to tonight. And the action, the sequence starts with another of these mile and a quarter. I was talking to KK and to Tony the last couple of days, and we talked about this. I mean, it's really one of the only places that offers these, 10 furlong events as a steady diet.
Oh, yeah. We get multiple of them a week. I would say at least two a week, whether it be a main special eight race or an allowance race. They don't really ever run this distance for anything lower than, a type of allowance or a main special eight. You don't really see that. So if you've got a relatively decent horse and you want to try to go a mile and a quarter and think they'll handle the synthetic, this is the place for you.
All right. Well, let's take a look at this. And as a, as a group, invariably, when you look at these races, you see horsemen that are, I don't want to say getting desperate, but invariably, the horses that, that are showing that they need as much distance, for as long as they write races, as they say. So you got a lot of horses here. In fact, look at Mike Maker's Ms. Sedona, the two. I mean, Maker debuted her at a mile and an eighth on the grass, and then she's run a mile and 3/16, a mile and 3/8, a mile and a half. It was obvious. This was a justify out of a Dylan Thomas mare, a $300,000 purchase. And so there was some hope that and I don't think it was for this filly to be late in her three-year-old year breaking her maiden here. It's an $80,000 purse, but still I think the expectations probably were higher. But invariably you see horsemen trying things to get a W, and invariably these fillies, that's a perfect example. I mean, you look at the breeding on this in this field, Caitlin. You got some very tawny pedigrees, and you got outfits like Shell Evans, Mission of Hope. They need these fillies to break a maiden at the very least to join broodmare bands.
Yeah, that Mission of Hope is bred really, really nice. I believe that Irish Mission was a Queen's Plate winner back in the day, and this one by Candy Ride. So there's some really nicely bred horses in here. We got multiple Justifies. You mentioned the other one, Jitterbug. That one is by Justify out of Apt, who I believe is a half-sister to Blame. So that's distance over top of distance. We have Fun Loving by Constitution out of grade one winner Frivolous in this race. The Brad Cox Philly is out of Electric Forest by Medaglia d'Oro. We have one that's out of Bird that's by Curlin. So just, I mean, it's so much. It's all about long distance running. I'd be interested to see if there's a way we can get a bomb into this race, if the horse is able to draw in with multiple scratches. Orderly Transition by Lope de Vega out of a damn Sealy mare has some form to look back on previously at Golden Gate over the all weather and may appreciate a little bit added extra ground. So that one's a big, big price though, but we'll see.
And I'm just, looking at, you mentioned the Medaglia d'Oro of Cox's. That's the 2-1 favorite with Peskitsa. And she is coming out of that mile and an eighth try where she only, you know, she only got beat a length and change and ran a very respectable number. I mean, she, it might be as simple as kind of leaning in that direction because so many others have had chances. But I'm just wondering, I've got to look this up, Caitlin, because her name, Farfalle, the Bowtie Pasta, I'm going to guess that this is a sibling of Orecchietti that Jonathan Thomas had.
I'm going to look.
Take a peek. Because that whole family, I think, has got all names of pastas associated with it. For whatever reason, but I do remember when Orecchietti, I remember the conversations with when she came around with Jonathan.
Actually, is not a sibling at all. The only other foal to race out, or is actually not race out of the dam, is a 2-year-old by Into Mischief. It was a $700,000 yearling or 2-year-old training purchase at a Shabir.
Okay. All right. Well,
but obviously, this is the family of Kentucky and McLean's Music, Uncle Chuck, all those.
Well, and I'm just pulling up, doing the same thing, pulling up the rest of the sibling pages. If there's any other hints that we're going to get, it's a very tricky way to start. A sequence like this, you know, the Will Walden Justify out of the AP Indy mare that you mentioned, Jitterbug, she's basically keeps running a winning race, and the Clement had her originally before moving over to Will, and he's had her long enough for two workouts at Turfway. I mean, she only needs to improve, you know, make any kind of a forward move in this spot to win. I mean, it wouldn't take much. Well, she's second choice too, right? 5-2. So there's she'd be no surprise.
She's the one I actually ended up on in this race. The blinkers go on for her, which I don't have an overly strong opinion about either way, but horses running for Will first time out as well as the blinkers going on are two very high categories for him on the year, and they have been positive ROIs for him when it comes to that type of thing. But if you look back at her turf races, she's just as effective on the dirt as she is over the turf. I think the mile and a quarter is going to hit her right between the eyes, because the mile and eighth, just a little bit too short, and the mile and a half or the mile and three eighths, just a little bit too long. So I'm kind of thinking that mile and a quarter is going to be right where she wants to be. And the addition of blinkers may just inject enough to make her a little bit more forward to kind of make the difference.
I'll throw one price out for people to consider. Pavel Metka has got the 12-1 Queen of the Rodeo. And her first race this year at Churchill, she was beaten 7, but she came back, and these were dirt races. But then this race she ran at Indy most recently, again, any improvement from that, second off the layoff, that dam was a nice burn. That was a nice, I want to say, Kelly Breen, if I'm not mistaken.
I think so.
That Byrne was a stake. She was a stake mare and a router. Queen of the Rodeo at 12-1. But for those that want to keep it simple and try to be narrow, I mean, the two favorites make sense, particularly Brad Cox with a horse that, you know, is only making a second start. So, you know, as opposed to the ones that have had lots of chances. And then Jitterbug, Mission of Hope, and I'm going to use Queen of the Rodeo. All right, that's the first leg. Second leg, Nickel Claimer. We're going to go a mile. And these are horses with a timestamp of a year ago that have not won a race since December 5th. So you got some horses that are coming off layoffs. Here's Michael Pino, who's as clever a horseman as there is. Second off of a year layoff, coming up from Presque Isle, Sound the Charge. But there's many, many opportunities in here, including horses off the claim. And we got surface switches going on. We've got sprint to route going on. What are we doing?
Richie's Got Game for Larry Ravelli just kind of looks like the one in this race, I thought. He's going to be a very low price in here, but if you look back at previous form, whether it's been here, it's been Presque Isle, been Gulfstream, even if he runs the numbers two back that he ran at Indiana, this horse already ran once at Fairgrounds, so he's coming back really, really quickly. I actually, this horse just ran less than 2 weeks ago at Fairgrounds. I wouldn't be surprised if this horse actually scratches, if maybe he's coming back a little bit too quickly and may not actually even be there. I'm not 100% sure, because the horse doesn't run that often together, so we'll keep an eye on him. But if he stays in, I think he's the one to be dropping low in class here. But if he does not partake, I'm a little bit interested in Akamai in this race. This is a forward type of a horse, getting slight class relief, getting back over the surface. He ran a couple of pretty good races against much tougher here a season ago.
Interesting. I'll check with Rebellion. As I mentioned early in the show, sadly, the trip to Hong Kong was to no avail for No Balls, who officially was withdrawn when they did the barrier draw earlier. And so no balls in the HKIR Sunday morning. Feel bad for Larry after sending the horse all the way over. Kind of,
yeah, I do too. That was going to just be a bang up race that they were partaking in, and it sucks to ship a horse all the way over there, end up with a little bit of a sickness, whether it be a shipping fever or what have you. The timing just absolutely stinks. It's not cheap, and I hope that he'll still be able to enjoy Hong Kong for a little while, though.
Well, Larry didn't go, but
he didn't make it over yet.
No, he went years ago when he ran the first time he ran a horse. Ravelli's not a guy that you can put in a cigar box for 16
no.
hours.
No.
He's wound a little too tight for that, so he was not going back to Hong Kong. He was going to watch it from home. You know, there's. I'll check with him now about whether they're going to run. This is a problem. If it's not Richie's Got Game, God knows who it is, because
exactly who is it?
You're counting on horses, a bunch of horses that haven't had any synthetic, in some cases, synthetic experience. I'll give you one horse that. That actually is, from a synthetic standpoint, a little interesting. He's going to also have to, he's stretching back out. How about Parker, 15-1. Sangaree wins at 17% on the synthetic. How about that? How about Parker? Right,
trying something new. Was originally entered yesterday as an also eligible and ends up scratching in favor of this spot to get in here. I mean, his numbers and figures from Hawthorne this season, after having a little bit of a tune up at Horseshoe Indy over the slop, more than good enough in here.
He doesn't win. I mean, that's the problem. He cashes a lot of checks. He's got way too many seconds. But if you're looking for a number, this is going to be a very tricky spot. The second leg, that's the sixth. All right, the third leg of this $155,000 pick five carryover. You got to think that, I mean, it's certainly going to take in another $500,000, I would imagine, at least three and a half times the pool size. We've got a 12-5 claimer, Caitlin Free with us, and we're going a mile.
I thought you could maybe try to get a little bit creative in this race. There were two that I really liked in here. Comedic Timing was one of those, coming in off of a mile and a half try and running like pretty well, and allow its company at Presque Isle is going to cut back to the two turn mile, which I think is probably this one of this horse's better distances. He had a couple of really nice wins here last season at a similar type of a level. I think the pace could have a chance to be honest in here, at least honest. I think there's quite a few that want to be forward. So I like Comedic Timing as well as the number three, Soul Coaxing. Here in this race, Soul Coaxing has only been on the all-weather once. It was a second-place effort at Arlington Park many years ago. But his numbers and figures right now, on the dirt and the turf, he's able to be forward. He's pretty tactical. I think he's got a chance in this race, too.
How many we got to use here?
I think at least a few.
This is a well-matched group, and again, you're dealing with some surface switches, and that's one of the reasons that the prices end up so volatile, particularly early in the meet.
Yeah, and then you see a horse in here like English Challenge, who's been around for quite some time, 8 years old, 6-for-24 at Turfway. His last win was here in Starter Allowance Company. And, I mean, is he capable of winning? Yes. Does he do a lot of winning? No. And that would be enough for me to, I wouldn't say totally leave him off a pick six or a pick five ticket, but it's tough. He's really tough to trust. There's a few in here that are really tough to trust, and that's just kind of the way this race is. Devil's Red, who's able to be relatively forward, as well as kind of be a little bit more patient. That horse is coming off a back win, switching surfaces, getting back on the all-weather. Hasn't been on it since the second career start by More Than Ready. He's interesting.
I've got nothing concrete. There's just too many in here that, here's a horse like a Platinum Ghost that at 4-1 that, you know, on the main track it would be a contender. And the two times that he's tried synthetic, it hasn't gone well. I don't know. This is getting more and more challenging as we walk through. The fourth leg is a second level allowance, and this is a quality group, Caitlin. We're going 6.5.
This is a very good group. I'm a big fan of this race. I hate to be super chalky in here, but I think if you're looking for a single in this sequence, the two Opera Mundi could be your girl. Brendan Walsh got her from Lerner over in France, thought enough of her to immediately put her in grade two company in the grade two Valley View at Keeneland, took money, ended up clipping heels. She looked really rang. She was wide. So I'm able to forgive that effort, but she has one win over the all-weather. That was at Del V when she was a stakes winner going 7 furlongs on the synthetic. One thing that I will say that I have really noticed, not only over here, but across Europe, the Kingmans absolutely love all-weather, whether it be Tapita or anything else, especially Tapita. We had several win here last season, and they continued to do really, really well. They run well down at Gulfstream. They just really seem to love this type of a surface. So with the class that Brendan Walsh obviously thought she had, she's a stakes winner over the synthetic. I think this is a relatively good distance for her going to 6.5. Opera Mundi is going to be the one I'm really looking at in this race.
Opera Mundi, and we, of course, she was discussed when the Valley View, go back to the Valley View, and Poolside with Slim, who ran well over the weekend, picked up another board hit. Certainly appeal on the turn back side, and Brendan pretty good with turn backs in general. Perusing. I'll tell you, Kelsey Danner, that Sickle Dance, coming off of a performance that win at Presque. Why wouldn't that work here?
Yeah, I think she's one that's got plenty of upside in this race. I think getting the 6.5 over the synthetic is going to be right up her alley. She's won two of her last three, broke the maiden, ran well, taking on winners for the first time in Horseshoe Indianapolis. She's certainly worthy of being a player in this race. Her as well as Opera Mundi, I like that they've both been training over this track too. And Victorious, for Billy Morey, she ran two very good races at this distance as well as 6 furlongs here last season. Didn't quite work out in the Queen's Stakes, but she can certainly rebound after two efforts against much tougher company on the dirt, getting back over the synthetic, and she's been working here too. So those were the three that I was really looking at, but a heavy emphasis on the two.
All right. Gets us to the nightcap. It's a maiden 75, and there's quite a few in here that, most of them have had plenty of chances, but you look outside to Kelsey Danner, the Starship stable horse, Starship Phoenix, been away since June of 23, so almost 18 months, and Cachaceria for Eduardo Caramori hasn't done much running, but also, hasn't necessarily confirmed that, she can't win. She's first Lasix as well, and the only one in here first Lasix.
My key with these types of races is if I see a horse, there's so many in here that have had so many chances and have already been running at similar levels. So those are the types of horses I want to pitch. And it's going to lead me to a horse like the number 4 Tribe in this race. Hasn't done that much running in two tries in Maine Special Weight Company, but this is a big drop that this horse is getting. And I preferred the race, even though she got beat by Moore, going the two-turn distance because she was able to get out of the gates better. You could tell she had relaxed and had better gait schooling. She was able to be more forward in the two-turn race. So cutting back to the two-turn mile, the surface switch really doesn't mean all that much to me. But if John Ennis, even at Belterra Park and Horseshoe Indy, thought she was good enough to be in Maine Special Weight Company and she took money, that's good enough for me to drop her down to this level. This is a good barn going from a Maine Special Weight to a maiden claim. Good overall in the synthetic. And the type of year, not only between here and Turfway, as well as Horseshoe Indy, Ellis Park, Churchill Downs, that he's had with Adam Biscuitza at 15-1. I'm very interested in her.
The Biscuit. Let's get the Biscuit home. Just thumbing through and, you see horses that have had countless chances, and when it comes to a sequence like this, a horse like Silent Secretary is 4-1 and has been beaten noses and heads and necks. I mean, over and over again. But at the same time, she does drop to the lowest level yet at 7,500. And Abel Cedillo gets aboard for Jake Radosovic. I mean, Silent Secretary's run plenty of races that could win this.
Beaten the neck at this distance last year at Turfway,
yeah,
too.
Yeah. I suppose, you know, Rusty, what about Rusty's horse? Yeah, that Work of Fiction out there. That's the eighth, actually, excuse me. I'm going to go back to look at the ninth. Yeah. This is not going to be an easy sequence to negotiate, Caitlin.
No, and if you hit it, you will be justly rewarded, I think, because especially the two type of lower level claiming races in 6 and 7, you got to get really creative in there. I think, especially if Richie's Got Game ends up scratching. I would love to have a chance to almost be alive to almost all of them in the finale, but to even get to that point is going to be really difficult.
Caitlin Free, what time is the paddock show?
So we will start with the pre-show, going over a couple of different things around 5:20, 5:15, something like that. Then we do the anthem. Tony does the changes, and paddock show starts around 5:35.
All right, let's get everybody tied on to it. And weather okay? We had just a cold night.
Yeah, just a cold night, but nothing else to remark in that department. I don't think that we're supposed to get any snow or any type of freezing rain or anything anytime soon, because next week it's going to warm up. So I think as long as we get through tonight and tomorrow with a little bit of chilly weather, the wind chills may be the issue, but I think we're still going to be warm enough. I believe it is, if the wind chill is below 5 to 10, that's kind of when you're in the danger zone, but I don't think we're going to get that low just yet, so I think we're going to be good to go.
Outstanding. Well, thanks for this short notice when carryovers pop up, but we'll be checking in regularly with you and Tony for Turfway action over the winter.
I love it. I always got time.
Caitlin Free, everybody. Follow her, Caitlin E. Free. And are you on Blue Sky yet?
I am not. I need to get that done.
All right. So in the meantime, Caitlin E. Free for everybody on Twitter. Thanks, Caitlin. Whoop. That's it. She had enough. A great half hour. This is tough. I was looking at it for the first time as you know, Caitlin analyzed, and I'll put a play together, but I'll tell you that right now, not confident. Yikes. Holy cow, this is a tough sequence. And for those of you that don't like synthetic, you probably feel like every Turfway sequence is tough. Let's take a break. We'll come back second half. We've got Sean Clancy standing by. It's almost time for – it's not almost time. It is time. One of your favorite segments of December. He's going to walk right into it. The Sean Clancy Christmas tree discussion. Right? All right. If anybody doesn't want me to talk about the Christmas trees with Clancy, let me know. Let me know now. But believe me, if you've never experienced the Sean Clancy runaway Christmas tree, you're going to experience it now or shortly. Then we'll get Dave Hill. We'll do some NFL week. What is it? Is it week 13 or 14? I can't even. It's week 13, right? I think it's 13, 14, 15, 16, 17. Yeah. There we go. Thank you, Brian. Better. We had, regarding the audio, we had to make a quick switch. Casey's recording system computer went out like 20 minutes before the show. So there wouldn't have been a stream and there wouldn't have been a recording. So we switched to the Albany studio.
And
if there was a little audio wrinkle early, that's what it was. But Brian just brought the audio, the background up for me, which I appreciate. What else? Jeff Franklin. I'm a little punchy. Having to do the snow removal this morning. Luckily, I'm leaving Sunday. Because usually when I leave town, that's when it snows. And Tina reminds me thereafter. All right, no reason to hang around. Let's go. Let's take a break. We'll come right back. Sean Clancy's next. Thursday at the races.